Good afternoon. Today is Wednesday, February the 26th, 57th day of the new year. Joining us this afternoon, Humboldt County Supervisor Mark Lovelace. Hey, guy.
How are you doing?
Good. Are you winning?
Winning?
Yeah. Well, I mean, you're tapping away on the computer there. I figure you're playing Angry Birds or something, Scrabble, something to keep you engaged while you're here.
I'm doing math.
Ooh. Fun. Higher level functions.
That's my entertainment.
Yeah.
That's what I'm reduced to these days for fun.
Well, we'll find out what other basic knowledge we can share when we come back.
At my bank, I feel at home. I'm Trish Greggy of the Journey's End, and my bank is Redwood Capital Bank.
At my bank, hometown banking isn't just something they say, it's how they do business. I'm Kevin McClendon of Georgia's Glass, and my bank is Redwood Capital Bank.
At my bank, we invest in the future of our community every single day. I'm Greg Foster, and my bank is Redwood Capital Bank.
Redwood Capital Bank. Our interest is you. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.
Good afternoon, KINS, News and Information Times 313. We're back to Talk Shop this afternoon with Mark Lovelace. But before we do, our quote this afternoon. Man, isn't that the truth sometime? Gene Fowler, sometime between 1890 and 1960, spelled like a guy. So I'm presuming it was a guy, Gene. Quote, writing is easy. All you have to do is stare at a blank sheet of paper until the blot drops of blood form on your forehead. Boy, isn't that the truth sometimes when you have to try to get something going? Do you guys have a lot of, I wouldn't say creative writing because that has a different connotation, but independent writing that you do, like ideas and responses and things like that, that are deliberative, that are personal reflections rather than stamp this and say, yes, I agree with that, and just kind of push stuff through?
Well, we all have, of course, emails and such that we respond to. And yeah, I'm sure we all respond in our different ways. And you know, we all try to be as responsive as we can. And then there's other things, board items that some of us will ask staff to draft up something for them. Others of us will do our own research, put something together and write it up ourselves. And there's different ways depending on the item and the supervisor in terms of how we do that. But in terms of like the great writings of, Abraham Lincoln like that,
no.
I don't think you're going to find it.
Yeah. Shallow pool. Yeah. No, I mean, I was thinking, a lot of times the general impression I think that folks have of supervisors are meetings, of pounds of paper or large files now electronically being received, having to be plowed through, rubber chicken.
Rubber stamps, you mean?
No, rubber chicken.
The
going to the various events and having to make personal appearances.
Yeah, the rubber chicken circuit.
Yeah. Not meetings, but just you have to be there and suck up some oxygen. And that's kind of almost what comprises 95% of the day. A couple phone calls, a couple emails, and that's the job description.
It can be. I really think each supervisor on this board and previous boards and other boards, there's a lot of opportunity to make of the job what you want it to be. I respect each supervisor and how they choose to do that. I think, to a large degree, it's also driven by what your constituents from your district expect.
Rather than coming up with position papers and things like that. Yeah. Hey, guys, here's an idea I've been kicking around. What do you think about this?
Supervisor Duffy was previously Supervisor Geist. She did a lot of very detailed policy type work herself and would bring well-researched items. She did the equivalent of staff work on some things in terms of what she would bring forward. I do a little bit of that too in terms of trying to write some of my own board reports and such.
So it's kind of like personal priorities.
Yeah. And others, will work with staff to develop something or, provide something short that asks staff to come back with something or they're working with outside parties to pull something together. And, there really is a variety of ways to do it. And whether one wants to say, these are the five or six things that I'm going to commit myself to in this office, and those are going to take precedence over other things, or someone can say, I'm going to put constituent services as my number one goal, and other, you know, larger policy efforts I'm going to have to leave to someone else. And there's really room on the board for everyone and every approach. And I think that, you know, with any board, you get enough variety that you're probably going to cover all the bases.
So some have narrower focuses, some have broader focuses, and
it
all works.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I think that the board benefits from a diversity of approaches.
Does it change over the time? I mean, it's not like mm-hmm. you've been long in the saddle, but you've been around long enough, mm-hmm. and got, you know, seen enough of the rodeos. Is this something, is it evolving for you, either spending yeah. more time or less time, more reliance, less reliance?
Well, this is a very different board than the one I came on to in a number of ways, not just politically or anything like that, but in terms of its approach to things. So I think that there has been a shift in terms of that. I've shifted and changed too in terms of my approach to things. In working with the board members, I work with them now differently than I worked with,
Well, I can't Jimmy imagine Smith Jimmy and sitting Neely, down and just knocking out a bunch of papers. He's more of a hands-on guy.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
Again, really, really strong on constituent services, and really strong in terms of with the groups that he worked with, like the Integrated Regional Water Management Plan that he really helped to establish that group. His way of leading was to help everyone work well together, rather than saying, I'm the one that's going to direct from the top down.
Yeah, he's not lifting. Yeah. He's hurting.
Yeah. So, yeah, there's a way to put it. There's a lot of room for different personality types, different skill sets that we all bring to it, and we benefit from that diversity.
KINS, News and Information Times 319. We'll be back with more from Mark Lovelace.
Now a minute of sunshine for Humboldt. If you've never been to Eureka's Sequoia Park Zoo, or haven't in a long time, you're in for a treat. Eureka is one of the smallest cities in the nation to have a zoo, and quite a zoo it is. It's among the redwood trees and specializes in a variety of small animals. Many exhibits have been updated, with more on the way. A big favorite is the red panda family. If you think of pandas as black and white, big, and chewing on bamboo, think again. Red pandas are small with reddish coats and white faces. Watch them scamper on their trees. The pink flamingo flock will dazzle you as you pass their pond. There are many more zoo pleasures awaiting young and old alike. There's a cafe and gift shop, too. On Wednesdays, all visitors come in at half price. For days and hours, see their website, sequoiaparkzoo.net. Sunshine for Humboldt is a nonprofit civic association dedicated to the people and places that make this a good place to live.
Good afternoon, KINS, News and Information Times 324. We're back to talk shop this afternoon with Mark Lovelace. Mark, the concept of public safety, I think, probably is something that is as varied as what you were alluding to with the personalities of various boards mm-hmm. of supervisors. What is security today is different than what it was yesterday, could be radically defined differently tomorrow, too. I mean, you look at the airport, for example, with the whole concept of TSA.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, that's changed a little bit. Who's responsibility for what, things of that nature. When you consider public safety in Humboldt County, is the model we have today one that you anticipate that'll be around tomorrow?
The model that we have today, I think I've changed the question a little bit. Is it the one that we desire? Is it what we think is the right model for Humboldt County? And while it may be the best model that Sheriff Downey can pull together with the current available resources, I don't think you'd find anyone that says that it's the optimum model and the one that we really would like to have. We know that right now we've got 13 frozen positions and sheriff's deputies down from what it had been. I'm not even sure how far back you'd have to go to get to that full staffing. We've also got a couple of positions that I know he's been trying to fill, and a number of folks that are out on long-term injury leave, which happens in a demanding physical position like that.
You got probation and a bunch of the others features that are in that chain that you don't. A lot of folks don't necessarily see because they don't have cars with funny lights on them.
Yeah, so that's talking about, you know, directly sheriff's deputies rather than the broader public safety, which, as you said, includes probation, includes the correctional facility, and so much more. With that, what people see most directly, you know, most people don't want to see the inside of the correctional facility. So,
the food may be good, but not that good.
Yeah, and I haven't even heard that. What people want to see is deputies on the streets. They want to see the patrols. They want to know that people are out there in the community. They want to know that they can respond. And right now, we know that we don't have the level of service that people would desire and that people expect.
And there's a higher level of sensitivity to it, too.
Yeah, and that's really driven right now. As we've gone through public safety realignment with AB 109, some of these shifts, there's been a real question about the impact it's had. And we have this statewide, both in Humboldt and statewide, we have a bit of a gap between what the data shows and what the public perception is.
Positive or negative?
Well, the public perception is that, you know, there's been a huge increase in crime in Humboldt County, and the data doesn't show that. And that doesn't mean that that perception's wrong or that the data's wrong, because what it misses is things like, you know, could we have more high visibility crime, or could we have more crime that's getting reported that's not being effectively followed up on because of the reductions in law enforcement and including in the DA and the ability to prosecute crimes.
Well, I would think all you need is a couple of cases, and heaven forbid we don't, like Father Fried.
Mm-hmm.
It's over. Game
so that would next. Be, you know, to the point I was saying of really high profile crime that people are seeing and being more aware of it. We can tie into that too, the sheriff's office, I think about 2 years ago, started sending out much more regularly press releases on more crimes, more offenders. And
the transparency efforts.
And that was about the same time that we had coming up on the web more of more web-based news with an ability to put that information out there. And so you could have, you know, maybe you don't have an actual increase, but you have, you know, people are seeing more of it, being aware of more of it.
Poundage.
So there's a lot of different things that could drive that. But regardless of whether the numbers accurately reflect the perception or any of those things, I don't think any of us desires to see the level of criminal activity of all kinds that we are seeing here in Humboldt County, nor do we desire to see the lower level in, not in enforcement, but in staffing of our deputies that we have right now. So I think that we've got to try to find ways that whether or not we're having that increase, we still see that we do have to be able to get our ability to respond through our deputies back up to where it needs to be.
Does Mendocino County and Del Norte County and Trinity County, our neighbors, are they experiencing similar profiles, similar numbers, similar trends, similar public perceptions?
I couldn't speak specifically to our neighboring counties, but I know I have seen reports statewide that discrepancy I was talking about, others are struggling with that too. Statewide figures show that crime has not increased as a result of AB 109, and places where there have been...
Really?
Yeah, there have been reports that say, now that doesn't mean that it's gone down, and it doesn't mean that crime hasn't increased. But it hasn't increased as a result of AB 109. And so studies that say, in terms of the community supervision piece, folks being released back into local custody instead of, in state prisons, that there's not... So there's two pieces of that. One, that there hasn't been the blanket increase. And where there have been increases, that they haven't been able to directly tie that to
turning people out because the Hilton is full.
Yeah, so it's it really
is intuitively different than what the cops. I'm sure you talked to some of the deputies also, like I did.
And what people are, and again, not just us here in Humboldt County, but across the state, you know, there are people that are just looking at these kinds of figures and saying, well, that's just not right. And so it gets at the difficulty of figuring out exactly what is the data that you need and what are the questions that you need to ask. And does, you know, if again, you know, you could not have an increase in crime, but if you have fewer deputies on the street that are able to deal with that, people might see a lesser response than they'd like to see, than they think we should be able to expect, that can translate into the perception of an actual increase. So there's a number of different ways to look at that. But again, I want to get back to the core point, which is that regardless of whether we've had an increase or not, we know that we've had a decrease in staffing for our sheriff.
KINS, News and Information Time. It's 3:30. We'll be back with more from Mark Lovelace.
Decade of Difference, making a real difference for the future of the North Coast. This is Jim Ritter with Humboldt Live in the Arcata High School Career and College Center. Do you have life and work experiences that could be a benefit to our local youth? We're recruiting community members to mentor and share ideas with our middle and high school students. Please call me at 839-5114 for more information. The Decade of Difference, making a real difference for the future of the North Coast.
Good afternoon, KINS, News and Information Times 335. We're back to Talk Shop this afternoon with Mark Lovelace. Mark, the public safety component, I think you're right, we were talking in the last segment about it, the perception versus reality.
Mm-hmm.
Boy, that's interesting because, you know, I'm not sure if you have in your neighborhood, but we certainly have seen more, mm-hmm. more folks that appear to be looking for opportunity.
Well, there's also a lag in the data in that, you know, we're looking at 2012 data. And
okay,
so by the time we have 2013 data, it'll be a year out of date. And
well, and what so, what does criminal activity, is that a DUI?
Yeah.
Well, okay, we're not going to see DUI.
Yeah.
We see somebody leaping over the fence. That's may come in at the same kind of charge, but it's a whole different level
yeah.
of safe feeling for a community member.
And part of the feeling of safety is not just the perception of what you're seeing on the streets in terms of, you know, the press releases or news stories about crime that's out there, but what you're not seeing in terms of the coverage that you'd like to see, you know, in terms of deputies
out there. Yeah, the response times and things
like
that.
Yeah, and that's directly related to our ability to budget for it and to provide for that staffing. And we know that, you know, like I said, with 13 frozen positions, a few more folks that are out on leave, you know, we know that we don't have the coverage that we'd like to see out there
in
the community.
Well, CHP is kind of,
CHP,
no, Adam has said they're getting more.
Yeah, they've got a couple of extra.
But they don't have it right now.
Yeah. And so, you know, we do have really, really good coordination and cooperation between our law enforcement agencies. They all rely on each other really well. But, you know, I think that I think I can speak for, you know, my full board. You know, we've all talked about our desire to be able to improve public safety and get more folks out there. But, you know, how do we pull that funding together is a question.
As you were saying that, I'm kind of giggling to myself thinking, I wonder if there's been a candidate, pick a spot anywhere, elected or campaigning, mm-hmm. who doesn't say that public safety is a number one priority.
So if it's a number one priority, we need to reflect that in every action that we take. We had recently our five-year budget forecast looking at the fact that, you know, following the housing collapse and, you know, the economic collapse from 2008, that, you know, we aren't likely to see a return to where things were. We're going to see adjusting to a new normal in terms of revenues and such.
Certainly in our area.
And
yeah.
so, and that's a common statewide, and you know, we've seen a return in terms of what Wall Street's back to normal, but how that's going to manifest itself for, you know, regular folks on the street and for revenues to governments isn't going to get back there. So so when we saw that forecast, you know, it really drives home that we've got to be very, very careful with the decisions that we make, knowingly or otherwise, that affect the budget. And so when we see regularly on our meetings, we see things that, you know, it might be just $6,000, you know, that we're going to allocate over here. You know, we might do something small. You know, this week we had an item before us, a request to cover the cost of planning commission meetings for this third review of the general plan update at a cost of $1,400 a night for these meetings.
Is that like rental of the facility kind of thing? Or?
That's for, you know, anytime we have a meeting after hours, it's cost for security, cost for Access Humboldt, cost
they're not
for
getting paid.
Preparation of staff reports and agendas and all of these things getting out there. And that doesn't even include the, that does include the overtime for staff, because anytime they're there after their regular hours, that's overtime for them. And so we have, you know, we had this consideration of $19,000 to cover the cost of these meetings. And at the rate the Planning Commission's been going on this review, we need to, if this is the path that is taken by the board and by the Planning Commission to have them re-review the entire thing, they've averaged less than 2.5 policies a night on the review. The conservation open space element alone has 176 policies, I believe. That would be 74 meetings at a cost of $1,400 a night, $103,000 just to get through this one element. If they continue at that rate and go into other things, we'd be looking at an ongoing cost for to the general fund, straight out of the general fund, ongoing additional cost just for these meetings of $130,000 a year. And we might see that in small segments of, oh, it's just $6,000 for this, it's $6,000 here. But when you add it up, you realize that's easily another deputy sheriff position, and we are making a decision, if we do that, to fund a third review of the general plan update that's already been fully reviewed by the Planning Commission. We're going to choose tacitly to fund that over another deputy sheriff position. That's the consequences of these little actions that we take.
How often does the board look at the priorities? Is that a part of the annual budget review process?
Yes, we do.
I'm thinking, you're mentioning the general plan or, you know, any of the various meetings that go on versus the library,
mm-hmm.
or some of the other areas that are general fund, either general fund matched or straight up 100% general fund dollars, mm-hmm. and really go through is this something we really want? Roads would be one that I would get excited about.
Mm-hmm.
You know, either you do it or you don't, right? I mean, you got to maintain roads to a certain level. In contrast that to some of the other various departments, you know, I probably wouldn't be anybody's buddy at the end of the process. But to really kind of, you mentioned a five-year plan, every three or mm-hmm. 4 years, every 2 years after elections, whatever the cycle might be, to sit down and go budget item by budget item, or mm-hmm. that's probably not unrealistic, but department by department and say, mm-hmm. high priority, low priority.
Well, there's... It is a little more complex than that, of course, funding that comes in from one avenue, we may not have any ability, you know, we may be prohibited under law from taking that money and moving it over here.
You have the allocated funding.
The Board of Supervisors actually has discretion. The portion of the general fund that we have actual discretion over is about 18% of the overall county budget. And so we don't have as much control as most members of the public think, and probably not as much as we would like. But in terms of priorities, Supervisor Duffy and I, a number of years ago when she was still on the board, we set that up to establish a process whereby the board would have strategic priorities to consider, which weren't in place before. And the board had, would revisit generally those kinds of things, but they didn't have a real clear strategic framework that would be come back to and revisit each year as a part of that budget process. And we did set up that these are the priorities that we have in place, and on all of our budget items, we have that we want anything that comes forward that has a budgetary aspect attached to it.
You can kind of use that as a reference.
Yeah, we asked our department heads to identify how does this fit within that. How does it fit within those strategic priorities? And so,
does that framework still exist, or even get referenced?
It's still there, and it does get referenced in the financial impact aspect of board items. So it is there, but it has to be to some degree intentionally nebulous, because you can't just say we're going to make this a priority over everything else, because every decision that comes forward, say we're not going to fund this because we're only funding this thing. How do you actually implement it? You have to.
There's reality.
Yeah. But what is difficult with that is, we have things that come forward that either are required by law or that, yes, this is, one of our priorities. But how do you weigh that against other things? And again, we have little items that come to us throughout the course of the year where we have, perhaps an industry that's asking for a reduction in certain fees, in our fee schedule to help them with a cost. And we, we understand, we're sympathetic to their concerns and stuff, and so we cover that. But then that ends up, having to be made up out of the general fund. and there's another, you know, 6,000, 9,000, whatever it is.
There's only one pot of money.
Yeah. And, or we have, you know, a request for support for, you know, another public safety need, and HOOPA ambulance service. Very, very huge, valid concern. We need to have ambulance coverage out there in Willow Creek area. But, you know, we're looking at when we meet that public safety need, we have to recognize there's $200,000 that is not available now to spend on other public safety needs with sheriff's coverage. So,
KINS, News and Information Times, 345. We'll be back just a couple of brief moments with Mark Lovelace.
Sacred Heart Church invites you to join us every Sunday for our liturgical celebrations. Saturday, 4 p.m. Confessions. 5 p.m. Sunday's Vigil Mass, 7 p.m. Spanish Mass, and on Sundays, 9:30 Morning Mass and 12:30 Spanish Mass. Come and celebrate with us.
Good afternoon, KINS, News and Information Times, 3:48. Final couple moments with Mark Lovelace. Mark, public safety, general fund, budget priorities, certainly it all gets put together. Is there a process that is gone through other than the budget process to identify where those monies go and the priorities that the board's going to have?
Well, the bigger question that we deal with, you know, with the board is when we are asked to do something or when the board asks staff to do something, things that are board directed. Very often, you know, we will ask staff to go do something, and staff will say, "Well, that might cost, you know, this much money," and we say, "Sure, that's fine." The hard part is not saying go ahead and spend this amount of money. The hard part is that what's left unsaid is where do you want us to take it from? And
staff doesn't ask that?
Well, staff, our CAO does, you know, ask us at times, you know, I can find $20,000 for this thing. You know, or we can pull it out of contingencies, our dwindling contingencies that are, you know, far below what they should be. And you know, we do have pots of money set aside for these kinds of things, but again, every time we make a funding decision, such as for ongoing meetings for the general plan update, $130,000 a year to get through this, that's another deputy position we could be funding.
Hopefully it won't come to either of those. Thanks for coming by. We've been Talking Shop this afternoon with Mark Lovelace. Join us tomorrow afternoon for more Talk Shop. Till then, go out and make it a good day. Hug someone you love. See you.